Lawmakers in Wisconsin are considering a bill to allow DACA recipients to become police officers and sheriff's deputies in an effort to assist with ongoing police recruitment challenges. DACA, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, has been a politically controversial program, but the bill in Wisconsin is seeing bipartisan support. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Today, we explore the proposed legislation that proponents hope will boost applicants for law enforcement positions, and we'll discuss additional ways DACA recipients could potentially ease the labor crunch in Wisconsin. Later in the program, we'll hear from Tony Gonzalez, Hispanic Outreach Coordinator for EAG Interpreters. But first, we welcome Wisconsin Republican Senator Jesse James of Altoona. He represents the state's 23rd Senate District and is the lead sponsor of this bill. Senator James, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jesse, DACA recipients can become state troopers, game wardens, corrections officers. They can serve in the National Guard. Why have they been excluded from serving as police officers or sheriff's deputies so far?
Well, currently we have statutory language that prohibits it. So basically this bill would allow a sheriff of a county or a local appointing authority from local law enforcement agency to appoint alien a DACA individual to work as a law enforcement officer or a county jail corrections officer and start doing patrol duties.
How many DACA recipients are in Wisconsin? Do you have a sense of that?
If I recall correctly, there's approximately 10,000 plus individuals that could benefit from this legislation.
Well, you're a police officer yourself, so you have a unique perspective here. How great a need is there for more applicants for these positions? How much are police agencies struggling right now?
There's a huge struggle with law enforcement agencies in recruiting, retaining, and getting new officers. It's very interesting. Just this weekend, there's over 5 pages of employment opportunities on WileyNet.org and for cop jobs in our state of Wisconsin. There's individuals that they'll come to a smaller agency. I just talked to a chief on Monday that had 5 individuals, and he's on his 4th one that sadly didn't make it due to a burglary felony conviction charge. And now he's on the 5th candidate that they're just not able to get these qualified individuals into the agencies, as well as, the sponsorship of our local law enforcement agencies and county sheriff's offices. They're able to sponsor individuals in the law enforcement academy classes, and 22 out of the 24 may be sponsored. So all the smaller rural agencies are fighting for those last 2 that maybe are looking for a part-time job. But it's very difficult across our state right now. It's the lowest numbers we've seen in decades.
In decades?
Yes.
In some cases, DACA recipients are bilingual. Not always, of course. But what kind of benefit would you see for having bilingual officers on staff?
Well, that's a huge advantage. I mean, there's times where I was able to help translate Spanish in my law enforcement capacity when I worked in Altoona. I was called out to scenes to help communicate and translate as far as what had happened on incidents. I've done field sobriety. We need more individuals like this. And having that dual language, whether it's Spanish or the Hmong language, it's a huge valuable benefit to any agency across the state.
And is the need for that growing? Do you see a greater need for bilingual officers than in the past?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, this isn't the first time that state lawmakers have tried to update the statute to allow DACA recipients to serve in this capacity. What happened the last time?
Well, I think we're kind of at the same point currently that what happened last time. It passed the state assembly, I think with no dissension, maybe 1 no vote, maybe 2, if I recall correctly. And then it never gets through the Senate. And that's where we're at right now.
Do you think this will be different this time? I mean, do you feel like you're getting more support, that the bill might be gaining a little more traction?
Well, we have a kind of a rule of 17 in the Senate in the majority, and I am currently too short away from achieving that goal. So it's not dead yet. I'm working diligently trying to go direct with the senators that may not support this, because the mindset of these individuals being here, they call them illegal aliens, so, or illegal immigrants, whatever you want to call them. You know, we're trying to help change that narrative, but there's just some that are very stubborn-minded and not willing to see it a different way.
What other kinds of arguments do you hear against this bill, besides the pushback against the legal status? I mean, are there other arguments, or is really that the crux of it?
That's the crux of it. They ask if they can vote. We tell them no. They say if they can't vote, they shouldn't be able to do the other things. They're here illegally. And I try to counter that with the amount of vetting that goes into these individuals, that the requirements they have to do for the rest of their life if they're going to remain in our state, in the biannual requirements to go and get vetted at Homeland Security Office in Milwaukee, the amount that they pay, and the information and the records and documentation that they have to produce. It's just, they're more vetted than even some of our own officers are that are currently working in the state.
And what's the response then? When you present these arguments, what are you hearing back?
Well, there's just no change of attitude or mindset. It's like it goes in one ear and out the other, and I don't think they're really listening. They may hear what I'm saying, but I don't think they're truly listening to the true requirements that these individuals have to do the rest of their life.
Well, personally, what do you think it's going to take? I mean, what do you think has to happen for this mindset to change?
Well, I think education and actually just professionally communicating with people. I'm not going to be one that I'm going to be a yelling, screaming, using profanity. I want to just have a dialogue and conversation. I might have to do this one-on-one with each of the senators that are choosing not to support this legislation at this time. And then just see if I can sway them. And if I can get those two more votes, it'll be on the floor in the Senate in the fall, and hopefully we can get it through by the end of the year.
Democratic State Representative Sylvia Ortiz-Velez from Milwaukee told Wisconsin Public Radio that opening up access to this new untapped pool of candidates could even improve department-community relations. Do you share that view? Do you see any merit to that argument?
100%. Any time that we can bring diversity into our local law enforcement agencies, and you know, you bring a unique perspective from another person that's having to live life a different way than we do, I think it's a win-win for our communities. And I'm very community-oriented policing mindset, and I think that's what will help our communities as we move forward in the state addressing these law enforcement shortages.
Do you have a sense of what other states are doing? Is this something that is legal in other states and not Wisconsin?
Yeah, there are other states that have this. I don't have the information with me immediately, but I can share that information.
So this isn't unique by any means?
No, it's not.
When you think about DACA recipients and the state's workforce, do you see other opportunities for DACA recipients to bolster the state's workforce when there are shortages? I mean, is this something that if this would pass, do you think it would open the door to other opportunities as well?
Well, I don't see why we wouldn't open up those opportunities. They can't become licensed nurses. They can't become social workers. They can't become all the professions that require licenses. They can't do that either. So I think there's opportunity to where we can change things because they're obviously dedicated. They're community members. They're paying other taxes and that we all pay. They're contributing members of our communities, and some of them are even very actively involved, even becoming council persons and stuff like that. So I think there's opportunity here that we're missing out on.
Well, the DACA program provides temporary protections against deportation for immigrants who arrived in the U.S. Without legal status before they turned 16 and who have lived in the country continuously since at least 2007. I'm curious, with your support for this effort, would you go one step further and support an effort to go provide a pathway to permanent legal status or citizenship for DACA recipients? What are your feelings about that?
Well, I don't know if that would be something we could entertain at the state level. That would be a federal level issue. I think, you know, you brought up the year 2007. That's when we also, I believe, got rid of them being able to become licensed Wisconsin drivers. I'm game for looking at that again as well. And I think that there will probably be legislation forthcoming this fall in regards to that.
You do?
Yes.
You see that coming out?
Yep. I may know somebody that's interested in doing that.
Okay. All right. Well, what are you hearing from your constituents about this? I mean, are you getting any feedback from the people in your district?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Our rural areas up here in west central Wisconsin, you know, they're common sense, logical people, and they just want to do what's right for their community. They want to do what's right for the people. Like I said, these people are members of our communities. We have dialogue, we have conversations, we have get-togethers. And I think that they are 100% in support of this. They like the ideas. And the mindset is, well, why not? What is the problem here? And obviously, it's the stubborn-headed politicians in Madison that don't have that open-mindedness and the willingness to at least negotiate and compromise. It's just an adamant no. And, you know, it's our jobs to try and address this and change our mindset and viewpoints and say, listen, our law enforcement support this. There's other organizations that support this, our jailers, our Sheriff's Deputies Association, Wisconsin Chiefs of Police. Why not? If they're the ones that are going to be impacted by this, why not let them have this opportunity so that we can potentially increase the levels of law enforcement officers that we have in the state?
And as a police officer and as a representative in Wisconsin government, I mean, personally, do you have hope for this? Do you feel like the time will eventually come for this to happen?
I believe so. I believe so. And like I said, this legislation isn't dead yet. We have till the end of the year to get it pushed through. My conversations are not over. We had to deal with a huge battle because at some point we were fed information that these DACA recipients couldn't legally carry a gun. Well, then that opened up a whole can of worms, but we addressed and fixed that, and legislative council down in Madison agreed that they can legally carry a handgun. So they already are. We have state troopers that are DACA individuals, and I just think that we're missing out on opportunity at the local level.
Senator, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us about this issue today. I very much appreciate it.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Wisconsin Senator Jesse James, Republican of Altoona, represents Wisconsin's 23rd District. He is the lead sponsor of a bill to allow DACA recipients to apply for positions as police officers and sheriff's deputies in the state. Tony Gonzalez, Hispanic Outreach Coordinator for EAG Interpreters, joins us next. And you can weigh in as well. You can join in at 800-780-9742 or email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. Earlier, we heard from Republican Wisconsin Senator Jesse James on a bill that would pave the way for DACA recipients to apply for positions in local police and sheriff's departments. You can call in with your questions, 800-780-9742. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Tony Gonzalez is the director for the American Hispanic Association of Central Wisconsin. He is a consultant with the American Business Immigration Coalition, and he's been involved in Hispanic outreach in Marathon County for many years. Tony, thank you for joining us today and spending some time with us.
Good morning, Shireen, and it really thank you for having me here in your program today.
Well, we just heard from Senator Jesse James on the bill he's authoring. What is your reaction to what you just heard?
Well, I am very, very thankful, and together there with Senator Jesse James, we have been working on this issue. I really love the words that he said, you know, and his position on this. You know, this is not an immigration bill. This is about safety for our communities in this particular instance. And he understands that as a police officer, a very seasoned police officer in Altoona, there is, in my mind, no better person that can really evaluate, see this as the how worthy it is and a good thing to follow through and have in our state.
Tony, this is not the first time lawmakers have tried to pass this kind of legislation. Is it different this time? Do you feel more of a groundswell of support?
Yes, we do feel a lot more support, and I think the approach has also been different. And mostly, and something that Senator Jesse James mentioned, we have to do a lot of education. You know, this issue of who the DACA recipients are, it's pretty broad, you know, as far as understanding. You know, we have to narrow down who DACA recipients are so people understand why this is the particular group that we are fighting for that to become eligible, you know, in this instance, to join law enforcement. And furthermore, you know, to probably get some professional licenses in the state to fill a lot of gaps that we have.
Well, let's talk a little bit about DACA and what it really is. It's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. So what is it? How does it work?
This was became an executive order under the Obama government administration. And basically what it did is protected a number of individuals, of kids mostly, that were brought to the United States illegally by their parents. So, you know, on the average, these are people that are, they came this country when they were 7 years old. There was a window of time between 2007 and 2012 that they had to come in. There were some requirements also. So it protects them from being deported because they really don't know any other country, anything else than the United States as their country. So they have this protected status for which they have to qualify. They have to apply for it initially. And there's a set number of qualifying factors that they have to come to the United States before age 16, live continuously since June of 2007. They had to have been president of the United States on June 15, 2012. So there, it's a very narrow window. It is not something that it's open. It's just a number of them that have qualified, and the numbers are about in Wisconsin right now. We got nearly 6,000 of them, mm-hmm. and the United States about nearly 600,000.
Okay, and we heard Senator James talk about how DACA enrollees are vetted. So they go through some kind of process. What can you tell us about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. So part of their qualifications is that they must get at least a GED. They cannot avail themselves in any moment of any federal or state benefits money-wise. Every 2 years, they have to renew their status as DACA at a rate of $495. And the only way that they're going to get their status renewed is if they kept their nose clean, let's say it that way. Mm-hmm. So they are very well-vetted people that are law-abiding citizens that are working very hard to maintain their status and are currently working in many areas in our state that serve their communities and our community in general.
And as the senator mentioned, the law now in Wisconsin allows DACA recipients to be state troopers, but not police officers and sheriff's deputies. Do you know, I mean, do you have a sense as to why the discrepancy there?
Well, yes. In Wisconsin, in order to be a law enforcement, a sworn law enforcement officer, the requirement is to be a U.S. citizen at this point. So that at this time is the little hill that we have to climb and get over and have changed haven't changed so they can qualify.
What kind of criticism do you hear when you talk about this proposal to allow DACA recipients to become police officers? What kind of pushback do you get?
You know, most of the pushback comes from people that really, number one, do not understand who DACA recipients are. Because oftentimes when this pushback has come and you explain who they are, it has changed the minds of a lot of people. Secondly, you know, there are people that say, well, you know, if they are not citizens, they shouldn't be able to arrest U.S. citizens, or, you know, they can't swear allegiance to the country if they're not citizens. That's the kind of things we hear. But, you know, like Illinois State Senator Don Harmon said, this is not about where you were born, but where this is about Americans today. And these individuals are people that, as I mentioned before, don't know any other country than the United States. They love this country. And on the other side, I would say we know many Americans born here that don't love this country as much as they do.
So when we talk about enrollees in the DACA program, how can they become citizens? Is there a clear path for that right now, or is that in limbo?
That is currently in limbo, sitting in the Supreme Court. And that is actually the problem because, like I say, you know, when these individuals were promised a path to citizenship through the DACA program, they heard the promise of a nation. It doesn't matter if it was a Republican or Democratic administration. And the promise was, if you comply and complete this set of requirements, we will give you a path. So right now, that has not been made valid to them. They have continue to re-register and pay their fees, and yet we have not made good with the promise from a government given to them.
Senator James talked a little bit about the bilingual aspect. Certainly not every DACA recipient is going to be bilingual, I mean, but many are, right? So he talked about the potential for more bilingual staff for these law enforcement jobs. Tell us a little bit about the impact that would have. How crucial is it for law enforcement agencies to have that multilingual staff?
That is a huge thing. I would invite many to look at a article from ProPublica about an incident that happened in southern Wisconsin, the death of an immigrant child, and how the impact would have been if the officer was really bilingual and could have served there better. The impact, and I'm an interpreter, is huge. Because not only is it a language ability, but also a cultural knowledge. And with cultural knowledge, you can really de-escalate many situations that typically could get worse because you don't understand what people are saying. You cannot have and do your police function with an interpreter on the phone every time when it's an emergency. So when you have officers that are culturally knowledgeable and bilingual, they are going to help. Matter of fact, I was very lucky to be a member of Speaker Voss's police task force. And one of the things that was spoken at that time was how important it would be to have officers that resemble the communities that they serve. This would fill that space.
You have a lot of conversations with law enforcement officers, as you just said. You're out in the community a lot. So when you have these conversations with sheriffs and police chiefs, what are those conversations like when you talk about this particular issue?
Well, you know, first of all, there is that education part, you know, because we can't assume that people know everything. But in particular in our area, I would say that it has been met with great reception, great support. They understand the need that they have in their departments, and they understand the quality of these DACA recipients and how well vetted they are and what they've done with our economy, their participation. So in general, with the officers that I've spoken, everything, they welcome this proposal. They welcome having officers of diverse backgrounds in their ranks, and they would like to see something done because they are really worked very hard. When you even talk about corrections and everything, we got officers that are doing 16-hour shifts because they have nobody else to help. This would not prohibit Americans to apply and qualify. This just adds to the pool of qualified people that we can have, and they really like the idea. And like I said, I'm talking about most of these areas in Wisconsin. Obviously, there's always people that don't like it, but I would say in the majority, law enforcement welcomes this kind of proposal.
Do you think they're willing to come out publicly and say, yes, we want this to happen?
I believe so. We have had conversations, and we're going to keep advancing those conversations. And I believe, and we have heard from other law enforcement. We had the chief of police from Green Bay that came to testify in front of the Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee, totally supporting. Even the former Green Bay sheriff came out and supported this proposal. So, yes, I believe that they will come out and give us their voice in support of this.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago the impact on the economy. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that DACA recipients have on the economy as a whole? And, I mean, are they becoming homeowners, high wage earners? What's going on there?
Absolutely. DACA will contribute an estimated $420 billion to the GDP, $60 billion in fiscal impact, and $12.3 billion in taxes. So that's something very important. They are taxpayers. So their contribution is huge. And currently, DACA recipients are working in many different areas, such as areas of hospitality, retail trade, construction, education, health services. And one that I like to really bring about, they are also allowed to be firefighters, which are all positions that have to take care of U.S. citizens, and it doesn't matter who the person is. They are going to take care of their community regardless of where they were born. Their loyalty and their spirit is here in the United States. They are American citizens, just short of getting their nationality here.
You talk with a lot of these people, and you know this recurring theme in the last couple of minutes is that they want to be here, they want to be citizens. How are they feeling about the way things are right now? That they're stuck, that they can't move forward and get that citizenship that they so desire.
It's incredibly frustrating because they are individuals that are really wanting to serve their communities. They want to show their worth. The fact that they remain with the guidelines that were given to them to become DACA recipients tells them their dedication, their love, and the need that they have of a promise to be fulfilled because they feel just as American as you and I feel. And they want this to be official. They want to be U.S. citizens and serve our country.
We often hear the argument that they take jobs away from Americans. What's your reaction to that argument? And you started laughing the minute I said that.
Yes, because that is probably one of the biggest falsehoods there are, and not just in this DACA area, but also in farming and many other different areas. Here in Wisconsin, Wisconsin employers are looking to fill over 200,000 open positions. At the same rate, Wisconsin unemployment rate right now is at 2.5%. This translates to 77,000 people that are looking for work. That is not even half of the need of those 200,000. So there is no way absolutely that we can say that DACA recipients or immigrants are taking jobs away. We need the people. Here in North Central Wisconsin, we have an aging community that is aging out of jobs. And we do not have younger generations staying here for the jobs. So there is no question that they do not take any jobs from anybody.
Today's political realm is an interesting situation, very polarized society right now. Do you see changes ahead at the federal level? Will the Biden administration follow through with its promise to provide a path to citizenship for DACA recipients? What will that take? And is it something that the administration can do, or is that something that's congressional?
No, that is something that the administration needs to take on and fulfill promises and really quit waving it to the side just because of fears of criticism and loss of votes, if they think of that way. The administration needs to take a position on this. Congress needs to take a position on this right away. In particular, DACA, as I said earlier, they're the best vetted immigrant that you have in this country. No one else goes through the scrutiny that DACA recipients have. This is an easy move, should be an easy move, that administrations have failed to address and take care of. So I think it is time that we keep making our legislators, particularly in Washington, and like Senator James said, nothing that we can do about immigration at a state level, but our federal officials need to really take a strong position and advance this to make sure that these individuals become citizens of the United States.
Why hasn't it happened so far?
Just like you mentioned before, there is such division. There is such misinformation about, you know, immigrants, you know, that they are the worst of the worst and that they bring only criminals and whatever, you know, and that is just not true. If somebody looks at the numbers, they'll see the contribution that immigrants have done to this country historically and today. It's still the same thing. We can even look at Florida right now, how the fear that has been put on immigrants is affecting the Florida economy because people are leaving. So this polarization and bad information is what's caused this. And we need to get it fixed with real, true, factual information. And hopefully people that are listening and really getting the message and checking it themselves, and they will see that this will be a contribution that we need to the United States. And historically, that's what we've done.
Tony Gonzalez is with us today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on a bipartisan proposal to allow DACA recipients to apply for jobs as police officers and sheriff's deputies, along with other ways immigrant and migrant workers impact the state's workforce. Join in at 800-780-9742 or send questions and comments to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward with our guest, Tony Gonzalez, director for the American Hispanic Association of Central Wisconsin, who stays with us for the hour. Earlier, we heard from Republican State Senator Jesse James about his proposed legislation to allow DACA recipients to become police officers and sheriff's deputies, something they can't do right now. Join in the discussion at 800-780-9742 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tony, back in May, you were a guest on PBS Wisconsin, and you spoke about driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. This is also something that Senator James mentioned earlier in the program. What does the law say now, and what do you want to see change?
Well, as a result of the Patriot Act initially, and then Real ID, licenses in Wisconsin were denied to people that did not have a Social Security since 2007, and we haven't had much movement at that time since then. So right now, somebody that's undocumented is not able to get a driver's license. So we are trying to have some legislation also done. And, you know, we're looking at the side of safety. We're looking at the side where not having a driver's license does not mean that people are not going to be on the road.
Right.
And we have to understand that these individuals are working in the fields. I'll also say that a lot of these individuals were the essential workers during the period of COVID. They remained working. They remained putting food on America's table. And again, that doesn't stop them from being on the roads because they got to take their kids to school, they got to go to the grocery store, they got to get gas for their tank. And, you know, one thing that I like to mention, even in the state of Wisconsin, they are able to register a vehicle absent of their legal status in the country. So as a matter of safety, we are trying to get a bill where they can obtain a driver's permit, a driver's card, where we as citizens are ensured that those that are sharing the road with us are people that know the rules of the road, have insurance, and we are safe in our roads. So, you know, this is not a favor to a small group. This is actually benefit to the community at large who these legislators represent.
I'll tell you, critics say that this could lead to fraud or illegal voting. So what's your response to those kinds of criticisms?
That is a false narrative created just to scare away and show dislike for immigrants. First of all, I'll start this way. I am very involved with our communities right here. They had no interest in voting. Their interest is to arrive safely to where they're going, take their kids to school, and earn their money. That's it. You know, they don't want to get involved in the politics of things. As far as fraud, you know, again, they have talked a lot of fraud. They haven't been able to prove nothing. And, you know, as an insurance and to make people feel good about this, we believe that even these driver cards can very highlight it, show these are not for voting purposes. Mm-hmm. And then we got to talk to the people in the elections committee who have their person at the voting booth, who I meet every time I come in and show my ID. They say, okay, you go and vote here. They clearly see and they know who's able to vote or not. So this is an issue that is a false narrative that they're just going to go out there and put a ballot. They got to come, they got to register, and if they're not eligible to, they're not going to be able to vote. So that is not a thing that is real. It's a fear method and not true, again, like I said.
And we have Nancy with us on the phone from Wausau. Nancy, hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to say it's just an excellent program today to really dispel a lot of the myths that are out there. I think we really need to do a better job as citizens of lifting each other up and giving each other opportunities. And that's all I had.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the call, Nancy. What do you think about what Nancy said?
I thank you, Nancy, for your call. Yes, and you're right. As citizens, we need to uplift each other you know, just show welcomeness and that we're all children of God and wanting to contribute to our communities.
Well, we've been talking a lot today about DACA recipients, but that's just a slice of the undocumented immigrant population in Wisconsin. So I'd like to shift a little bit to that other segment. So how many people are we talking about, the undocumented immigrants in Wisconsin? Do you have a sense of that? Is it in the it's in the thousands?
That is in the thousands. DACA recipients, we know we have nearly 6,000. The overall numbers in Wisconsin, they're very difficult to gauge because, number one, if we had our last census was not really descriptive of who we had because there was a lot of fear and, you know, registering or showing, you know, who lived where. But, yeah, we are on the thousands. I don't have the exact mm-hmm. number to really tell you.
How do they get here and why do they come?
You know, they come because a lot of business owners, companies in every area solicit their work. They open and they are ready to employ people because they can't get other workers. And in order to survive, they need to get workers. Yeah, they come to the southern borders, but I must remind our listeners right here that the majority of people that are here legally in this country flew in. It's not through the border that our numbers are great.
They fly.
Flew in. They fly in. Their visa overstays and things like that. So they come, and because their families, you know, many times here in Wisconsin, they find a friendly environment, good working environment, safe. And, you know, they come because they really want to work and they want to provide for their families. So that's how we got a lot of people here in Wisconsin.
I want to bring up a recent case in Marathon County that made headlines. There was a man who was kidnapped. He was taken to Florida against his will, forced to pay off a debt to pay off a debt to the people responsible for bringing him to the U.S. Now, ultimately, in this case, the man was able to contact family. The family reached out to police. Those people are facing kidnapping and human trafficking charges now. That's still working its way through the court system. How frequently do you hear about difficult situations like this?
Not enough, because we have more situations that do not get reported. But I am going to give huge credit to our local law enforcement here in Marathon County. They have extended their hand to our Hispanic communities regardless of their status. We've been able to show them that they are not immigration. that they are local law enforcement interested in the safety of our community. And this is the reason why, in this situation, the families came forward to report what was going on, and we were able to rescue these people, this man from coyotes. That's what we call them, coyotes, people that get paid to get people across the border, and that is thousands of dollars that get paid to them. We need to change that. Those dollars can be invested in the United States with a good, robust immigration policy, and these people can be safe. We can eliminate that coyote who causes more problems that we have time to describe here in this program right now. And yes, the trust that law enforcement has done here in our area has enabled these things to happen, and we need more of that. And that way we can end this problem that we're having.
Not necessarily in this case, but generally speaking, what happens to the person who was brought here illegally in a situation like that? Are they sent back? Is it a case-by-case basis?
Well, there's different scenarios that could happen. And one of them would be, you know, when people are able to report that they were victims of a crime, they're able to apply for a certain visa status as long as they are willing to contribute with law enforcement reporting who the perpetrators are. You know, there may be situations, unfortunately, that the person may get deported. But generally, if they're victims of crime, there are means and ways, even with the Mexican Consular Office in particular for Mexican citizens, that they can report these crimes. And as this gets investigated and resolved, they are given the opportunity to remain in the country and perhaps, you know, legalize their status.
What about in the case of other crimes like assaults, burglaries, robberies? Are these types of crimes also underreported out of fear of what will happen if they go to the police?
Yes. My answer to that would be yes. They are underreported because not everybody feels the trust towards local law enforcement yet, because for undocumented people, anybody in uniform feels like a threat. So, you know, programs like 287G that they have in some counties right here totally contribute to the underreporting of crimes because people are fearful to come forward. So those are things that need to be eliminated so that we have safe communities and communities that feel confident enough to go to their local law enforcement and report things like you're mentioning right there, crimes.
We heard Senator James, Republican of Altoona, talk earlier about the proposed bill that we've been discussing this hour that would allow DACA recipients to become police officers and sheriff's deputies. And he touched on this a little bit, too. Do you think that having immigrants and community policing would help encourage crime victims who are undocumented to come forward? In other words, how crucial is it to have somebody on the force who understands the complexities of these types of situations?
It is. It is amazingly important. Number one, like I said, you know, in these times that we talk about police shootings and racism within the ranks and everything, this would really, you know, that cultural awareness, first of all, will help with the de-escalation of situations. You know, some people in our community speak a little louder than others, and their behavior is different. But once you understand what their culture is like, then you know how to approach a situation better. So also the ability of the language for people to understand what instructions you're given and everything is very important. And, you know, I have personally brought law enforcement officers that have been in the Wausau Police or Marathon County Police to our events, either in our soccer tournaments, which is, you know, a lot of Hispanic and immigrants, and that trust that they build with them really helps for people to have a little more familiarity with law enforcement and feel more confident in coming to them in times of need.
In your work, what are some of the other big challenges you see that undocumented immigrants face when living in Wisconsin? Health care, for example. How difficult is it to access health care?
Well, and I'm glad you asked that because they like to say a lot of times that they're using money from the state to get health care and everything. To be eligible for state health care, you have to have a Social Security. to be able to buy insurance, and this is for any American citizen, is very expensive. People don't have that kind of money. So living under the shadows poses a great threat to their health, to their welfare. And, you know, a chain is only as strong as their weakest link. So it doesn't matter if an individual is undocumented or not. If they are sick and they live in our communities, and, you know, it puts everybody at risk. So these are things that need to be resolved so they have better health to access, better health to education. And, you know, let me tell you, they want to continue to pay their taxes. And I say continue because they are already paying their taxes when they go to the stores, when they purchase goods anywhere around here. Even many of them with their checks, there is a contribution to the IRS. So these are tax-paying individuals that deserve to be able to live amongst us just like anybody else would, so that all these issues with health, with work and everything are eliminated.
What about mental health? You've talked about this before, too. An issue that you're really concerned about is access to mental health care. What's the situation now, and what would you like to see happen?
Well, I would talk about that more, you know, in relation to North Central Wisconsin. You know, there is a great need for mental health providers that understand the language, understand the culture. We have difficulty already getting mental health providers just in English, Anglo terms. So actually, you know, something with the DACAs who are going to school, who are getting nursing titles and everything, would be very important to have, because that would address this mental health issue. You know, you have to understand how tasking it is every morning that somebody leaves for work thinking that they might not come back to their family. These are really issues that are affect people's health, mental health, and we need to address it because they're human beings. They are among our community. They are required by our community, so we need to take care of that and be able to get more help and assistance in that area.
You talked a little bit about the reaction you get when you talk to people about the DACA bill with respect to law enforcement. What about the idea of providing a path to citizenship for undocumented residents altogether? What do you hear from people on the street that you talk to? What's the general attitude about that?
Well, you know, the general attitude really changes when you are able to talk to people one-on-one and get them to understand more of the situation. When they're exposed to the narratives that they hear from news outlets that like to put everything into flames, they're not sympathetic to it. They think that we're just allowing everybody in the country. So most of the time when you get to talk to a good group of people, people want this solved, too. You know, they think it's important. And this is not an issue where we got to fix the border and then we take care of the 11 million there in the country right now. I think most people can walk and chew gum at the same time. We have to have a robust policy at the border, and we have to have a pathway for the people that are already here who have shown their contribution to the community. They can show it in many different ways. And many of these people that people talk about and call them illegals and everything have been in our country many, many years. And, you know, the fact that they have had no involvement with the police or any problems will show that they are people that deserve a path to citizenship. They're not asking, I'm just going to become a citizen just because. They just need a way to be able to do this and, you know, choose to be an American citizen or choose to be a legal resident and pay their taxes and go back home, visit their families, and contribute to this economy anyway.
We've got about 30 seconds left in our time together, and I guess I just, final thoughts. Do you think the tide is turning in public opinion on these issues?
I believe it is. I believe that there is more awareness of the reality of the situation. I think there's more organizations that have a bigger heart. And, you know, I must say that in particular for this DACA situation, there's no safety concern. They're law-abiding citizens. They're tax-paying contributors. And it will fill a labor shortage that we need to fill.
Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward, extending once more a sincere thanks to our guests, Wisconsin Senator Jesse James and Tony Gonzalez. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Kate Spranger. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer, who is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program and our previous programs at WPR.org/Route51 and on your favorite podcast platform. If you'd like to get in touch, email us ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week, we're headed out of town.